everybody. Let's bring it back to part two of It's All About Food. I'm Karen Hartglass. I've had a moment to sip my cold-pressed jasmine tea. And can we talk about cold-pressed tea for a minute? I know I've talked about it before. I just want to remind you it's like the best and easiest thing on the planet, especially on a hot day. So I learned a while ago from Dr. Greger in his book, How Not to Die, that the wonderful antioxidants that we get in teas, like black tea and green tea and white tea, they're even better when we cold brew our tea rather than adding hot water or boiling water to it. So now what I do is I put my tea in a little stainless steel basket and put that in a large wide mouth glass jar. Fits in really nicely, and I pour the water over it, put it in the refrigerator, and in a little while I have really lovely tea, and I find it tastes even better. Somehow you don't get the bitter flavors that you sometimes get with tea, and you only get the sweetness. So, here's to you. That's good. All right, let's move on. My guest is Stacey Murphy, and she has helped thousands of new gardeners from six continents grow vegetables and herbs in small spaces, so they can enjoy fresh, affordable vegetables while creating a more sustainable future. She walks eager growers through her holistic garden system, showing what to grow, when, and where. Stacey is a garden geek, growing food since 1979, and her superpower is packing literally tons of food into tight spaces. Dozens of her students who have trained at her backyard urban farm in Brooklyn have gone on to start their own homesteads, gardens, and farms. Featured on Martha Stewart Radio and PBS's Growing a Greener World, Stacey believes growing food organically is the best health plan for people, communities, and the earth. And you can find her at growyourownvegetables.org. And don't forget to sign up to receive her best gardening tips and strategies. I won't forget. Stacey, how are you?
I'm awesome. And I wish I had made some cold brew tea so I could enjoy some with you right now.
Oh, great. Here's to you.
Awesome. Have you ever tried it straight from the garden?
You mean the tea straight from the garden?
Harvest some herbs straight from the garden?
Oh, yeah. Yes, absolutely. I love, you know, I lived in the south of France in the early 90s. And they like to make a lot of thyme tea.
Oh, yeah.
And fresh thyme, it just would grow wild in the local woods. Oh. Oh.
Just heaven.
And another thing I'm doing, you know, it's the simplest thing, and I get so much joy about it. But we were recently at this new restaurant called PS Kitchen in Manhattan. It's a new vegan restaurant. And what they did in the bottled water, that it's just bottled tap water or bottled filtered tap water, is they put a sprig of mint in the water. And wow, it's fantastic.
Yeah, so much more refreshing. And
just a little sprig.
Yeah. And, you know, it's crazy because it doesn't take that much space or effort to grow your own herbs on your windowsill even. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're in New York City and you don't have any space to grow, but you have a window that faces the sun, in about 6 linear feet, you can grow all of your herbs for the year. It's amazing. And then you could have cold brewed tea every day of the year.
And a lot more.
Exactly. Exactly.
A lot more. So how would we grow herbs on a windowsill?
Yeah, well, I mean, the first important piece is you do need the sun. Without the sun, you got nothing. It's
yeah, you know, I was just talking about the sun in the first half of this program and the eclipse and how everybody was so in awe. And I want to remind people again in the second part, we need to be in awe every moment that the sun is out there. It's incomprehensible and amazing, and we needed to grow herbs.
All right. And I mean, essentially, photosynthesis is like a miracle, you know, sunshine and carbon dioxide, the plant converts that to sugar and it grows plants from that sugar. And then basically you get that fresh food. Oh man, so important to have that sunlight. So if you're going to grow herbs, yeah, sun, you want at least 6 hours of sun if you want a lot of herbs to grow. And so the way to test that is on a nice sunny day, sit in your room near that window and just mark every hour. Is it in sun or is it in shade? And if you have 6 hours where it is in sun, then you could grow herbs on your windowsill.
That's a really good tip.
Yeah.
And I know that you're full of really good tips.
It's my specialty.
You know, the thing about growing food, whether you're just growing a few herbs on your windowsill or more in a garden or you have a farm, it brings out so many important things. People are so separated from who we are, what we are, where our food comes, what it is, what it takes. And when you see life just spurt out from a seed, I think it helps ground you and helps you come back to that appreciation and awe that we all should have every day.
Yeah. I've had students that have said the most earth-shattering things to me with their experience on the farm. So I started a youth farm in Brooklyn. And for any listeners who are in or near Brooklyn, you got to go visit it. It's amazing. It's 1 acre on the front lawn of 5 high schools. And those kids, they're learning how to grow food and it's changing their lives. The first thing is that it's growing your place. I mean, you're actually changing the face of the planet. It's kind of surreal when you think about it, that you are changing the face of the planet when you garden. And I mean, this is a little bit on the heavier side of things, but I think people will understand why it's so important to understand this. Compost holds so many lessons for us about the life cycle of everything and the place in the world. And I had one student who, we were learning how to compost in the fall. He threw his orange into the compost bin. And then in the spring, we came out and I pointed to the pile and I said, there's the compost. Let's go put it on the beds. And the kid looked at me and said, where's my orange? And I said, it's in there. And he's like, but it's all dirt. And I said, yeah, it disintegrated. It decomposed. Remember, we talked about this and this is what it looks like. And he said, oh my gosh, I get it. He said, he's like, dust to dust, ashes to ashes. He's like, I get it. And he just like had this moment where he came to terms with the preciousness of life and all of the cycles of life. It was incredible. It was unbelievable.
Yeah. I love when people just get it. Yeah. So when did you just get it, Stacey?
I led a very enchanted childhood. I grew up in the suburbs of Detroit and my mom, bless her, it was the 70s and she was on a tight budget. My parents were both teachers and they were doing everything they could for us. And so they decided to garden in order to get some food because our budget was so tight. And I grew up in between rows of giant snap peas and tomato bushes and blackberry bushes. And I would just sit outside and pick things off the vine and eat them. It was unbelievable.
And that's the way it should be.
I want that for every kid. It's why it's so important for us to pass this on from generation to generation to learn how to garden if you don't already. And if your kids, time is so precious with kids because they grow out of the phase so quickly of being involved in nature and just, you know, starting that gardening bug early is so important.
I know. there are so many ways to garden and I'm glad that you're doing what you're doing. So, how other than a windowsill, what does it take to grow in a small space?
Yeah, awesome. It's absolutely less space and less time and effort than you think. I'll just say that because most people, when they think about growing food, They think it takes a lot of energy and a lot of space. And really, when you have about 100 square feet, which if you think about the size of like an SUV, the ground space that is underneath that SUV is, how big is that? That's close to 100 square feet. It's a little bit smaller, but about mm-hmm. that size, you can grow the vegetables and herbs that you need for your family. So let's just make a distinction here that vegetables, most of them don't need a lot of space, and herbs don't need a whole lot of space at all. So you won't be growing things like necessarily like corn or soybeans at a really large scale, but you can grow all of your greens, you can grow all of your tomatoes and eggplant and pepper and all of your herbs and your zucchini in a space that's about 100 square feet.
And those vegetables tend to be the pricier ones in the supermarket.
I mean, yeah, especially things like tomatoes and the homegrown, they're going to taste so much better off the vine. You can't even imagine.
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you've had a number of different programs to help people get started and get better at what they're doing. And can you tell us what some of those have been and are?
Yeah, sure. And I just wanted to preface this with, you know, when you get started growing food, there's kind of three stages. There's the stage where you're just an absolute newbie. You've never done anything. You're just interested and you've never planted a seed. And it's going to be at that stage, you're going to feel probably a little intimidated by the sheer amount of garden knowledge that is available on the internet. And, you know, where do you get started? And then there's a second stage, which is like you've tried to garden and maybe you've had some success, but on the most part, you just feel like you're not getting anywhere. And then there's a third stage where you start to feel comfortable. And then basically you want to double your yield. You want to know how to like to amp it up, right? And so I have an online course called Grow Your Own Vegetables, and it really goes through all those different stages. Anybody can enter, and they basically, when they end the program, they're in the next phase, and they can retake the program in that next phase and jump to the, you know, the third phase, so to speak. So there's a big spectrum of growers, and I just want to make sure everybody understands that it takes a little bit of patience to learn how to gardening. In the end, it's going to be easy, and you're going to be shocked at how little time it takes to garden. But when you're just getting started, it's going to take some time, just like when we're babies and we're trying to learn how to speak, you know, in this way, we're trying to communicate with plants. So my classes really help people, they work through my system, my garden system. And what it does is it helps them speak to nature and communicate to nature so that they can work with nature so that wherever they are, plants are going to thrive. So that's a little bit about the course. And so lately I've been teaching a lot of online courses, and there's still lots of really great resources in Brooklyn and in New York as well for in-person events that I'm no longer there in person. I'm more around the world at this point. But if you go to the youth farm, and I don't know the website for that off the top of my head, but there are amazing workshops there in person as well, and opportunities to intern if you have a free summer and you want to go and spend some time there as well.
That's good. I like the idea of communicating with plants. And, you know, I think we're here to learn. And it's my intention to just keep learning and learning until it's time for me to disintegrate and go back into the earth and whatever that cycle is, ashes to ashes, et cetera. but it's like crawling, walking, running. And as I talk about all the time about finding your kitchen, it's the skills to cook. It's not hard. It just takes a little time to get familiar, to get your hands used to the few skills that you need to put a dish together. And I'm sure growing food is like that because it's in our DNA. This is what we're supposed to be doing.
It's so right? basic, right? We need food. We need shelter. And
yeah, I know.
And
Yeah.
I was going to say, yeah, I think it's part of our birthright, you know, to work with nature to grow some food for ourselves, but also to ensure that the earth has a healthy future. I mean, the earth is going to go on without us.
That's right. That's absolutely right. We don't have to save the earth. We're just talking about making life livable for our species, which, you know, some would debate that that's maybe not even a good mission.
We won't go there.
We won't go there, not today. We'll go there another day.
Yeah.
But growing your vegetables is a fun and important thing to do.
And wanted to add to that, that one of the things that I thought was so amazing about growing in Brooklyn was that the community that I lived in was very rich culturally. Lots of West Indian populations, Dominican Republic, Jamaican, Haitian, all different groups of people who had come to the United States. And it's incredible how you can connect over food. And I think it's also one of our being here on this planet means that we have a cultural heritage that we communicate with our ancestors through food as well. And those traditions are so rich. And the crops that we grew in Brooklyn were very specific, some of them, to the people who were in the neighborhood who wanted those foods. So if you can garden, you can grow varieties that are from your hometown or your home country. You can grow them where you are so that you can bring your cultural heritage back into your kitchen, even if they don't have it at the farmer's market. That's what's so powerful, I think, about gardening, is these special varieties. You know, even in Brooklyn, we could grow some of the crops that mm-hmm. people would consider tropical crops.
Now, right now it's late August. So if somebody wanted to start gardening, is there a good time of year to get started?
I like to say that it's always a good time to start. It's today. I can hear that it's truck in the background.
Okay.
Wouldn't it be amazing if the ice cream truck had garden fresh?
Oh gosh. You know that truck comes around a little too often, and it always comes around during this show. So I always put out a silent wish or a wish out loud that one day that truck is going to have these luscious treats made from strawberries and almonds and dates all blended up together, maybe even added a little kale in there to give some nutrients, but nutritious good treats.
Yeah.
I can dream.
Yeah.
It's not my theme song, folks.
It's pretty ironic, but it's awesome. So what I was saying is it's always a good time to start. Now is a great time to start. So what's amazing about Mother Nature is that it's cyclical and there's always a fresh start. So you can actually grow indoors even if it's winter time and it's too cold to grow outside. So there's always something you can grow. And so if you really want it, you can make it happen. So if you're, let's say it's cold outside and nothing's going to grow, you can sprout pea shoots, sunflower shoots. Those are super expensive at the store, and you can grow them really inexpensively. You can also sprout lentils and some other really interesting things. So you could do that indoors in little jars, little mason jars, and it doesn't take much time or effort. It takes about 10 days total, sometimes less, sometimes 7 days. So that's something that you can do when it's cold out. If you have 28 days between now and your first cold snap of the year, you can grow lettuce and radish and spinach and some other things.
28 days?
Yeah, 28 days. and then there's longer maturing crops. You know, beets are a little bit longer, and then tomatoes are a lot longer. You know, they might be more like 60 days to ripening, and you really need hot for that. So basically, there within growing, there is, people talk about the cold weather crops and the warm weather crops. And for people in the tropical regions, there's also like hot crops. Mm-hmm. And so as long as you're picking crops that are going to mature in the time frame that you have available, it's never too late to grow.
It's never too late or too early.
Yeah, that's true too.
To grow. Well, that's good. So if anybody out there is inspired, you can get started right now.
Yeah.
And maybe maybe chickenoutgrowyourownvegetables.org will help you.
Definitely.
Give you that extra kick in the butt, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Okay, so let me ask you, have you invented anything on your own in gardening or discovered anything on your own or maybe had some kind of garden epiphany?
I would say it's somewhere in between epiphany and, well, I'll just talk about it then. We can try to put a word
call it what we want. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Two things. I mean, one is the plants. I talked about this, that we're communicating with plants, right? And communicating with nature. It's so incredible when you're standing in your garden and you realize that the oxygen that you're exhaling is the carbon dioxide that you're exhaling is the carbon dioxide that the plants are turning into their food, and they're exhaling oxygen for you. There's this moment when you're standing in your garden and you realize the powerful connection that you have to those plants and the amount of wisdom that you can tap into just by watching your plants and how they respond and using your intuition for what they need. And I definitely think that talking to plants and playing music for plants, all of those things that promote those interactions between species are things that the plants feel and that in return we feel. So that, I don't think that's a new idea by any means. I think that there's lots of people studying that. But the moment that you feel it in your body and you're realizing that what you're exhaling is what the plants need, there is a feeling of empowerment that you can do this, that you've got it, that you, it doesn't matter if you know everything in the world. Mm-hmm. All you really need to know is this connection to this plant. So that's something that I really want everybody to experience once in their life. It's a beautiful moment.
And all you have to do is what I do for a living, which is breathe.
Exactly. It's incredible. It's so powerful. And then, you know, beyond that, so that for some people, that's kind of woo-woo. That's like, I don't know about that. I don't know if I can really feel that in my body. But the science behind it is the other side. So I benefited from the knowledge of dozens of organic farmers that have come before me. Oh, my goodness. Organic farmers are some of the least respected people I know in terms of, you know, how people value what they do and how they talk about farmers sometimes is really sad, how they treat farmers. So I learned so much from organic farmers. And the thing that makes what I do unique is that I'm able to communicate a system that farmers have used for years in a really simple way to new gardeners so that they can take all of that knowledge and basically use it to just crush it in the garden and get tons of food and really simply. So I credit so many organic farmers that I've worked with because what they have shared with me in terms of the science and their process, I've basically taken that and simplified it for the home gardeners. So you're getting like the most up-to-date research in farming when you work with me.
Beautiful. Do you have a favorite that comes up out of the ground and always gives you the most joy?
Oh my goodness.
Well, you love all of your plant children equally.
I like to think I love them all equally, but if I were to look at my garden right now, I would have to say that it's always been basil.
Mm.
Whenever I garden, it's everywhere because it's one of my favorites. And there are so many varieties of basil. I happen to be Italian, but my favorite variety of basil is Tulsi basil, which is some people call it holy basil from India. And it's got incredible medicinal qualities. It helps you adapt to stress. It has a sturdier quality to it than the Italian basils. And so when you make pesto from it, it's really like charged. It's really chewy and it has an extra impact in it. I have to say that it isn't present in the lighter weight, thin leaves.
It has more muscle.
Yeah. And I love both. Don't get me wrong. I love both. But I have to say, probably basil in general is my favorite. It's aromatic. It flowers. The bees love it. It's a pollinator. It produces a habitat for beneficial insects. So it does all of these wonderful things for your garden. And it tastes good in tea. It tastes good on top of food.
yes, I love basil. I just love smelling it like a bouquet of basil.
Yeah, right?
It's fantastic. Yes.
We call that food for the soul.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad you're doing what you're doing and helping so many people to grow their own vegetables. We need to be doing that as much as we can in every nook and cranny that we can find to grow food. I really believe that that is so important. And to also, as much as we can, take our reliance off of big ag, the big farms that are growing food in these unsustainable ways, and they're not growing quality food, and they're poisoning our soils and our water and our air. We need to take that back, folks, and we do it. We can do it first in our own small spaces.
Yep, and keep in mind, it does not take nearly as much effort, space, or time than you think.
Okay, we're going to hold you to that, Stacey.
Awesome.
Okay, thank you so much for joining me on It's All About Food. Everybody visit growyourownvegetables.org. Whew. Okay, we just have like a minute or two left. And I wanted to tell you next week, we're going to continue on this theme. And I'm bringing back Wild Man Steve Brill. He was on this program about 7 years ago. And he'll be on the show with his daughter, Violet. And they'll be talking about edible medicinal wild plants and mushrooms that you can forage, plus hands-on environmental education for kids. And he's a lot of fun and very knowledgeable. And he's gotten into a bit of trouble, too. And that's always kind of fun to hear about. Sometimes we have to take risks when we want to do things that are right and important and just and good. And you heard it all here. Thank you for joining me. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to it. It's All About Food. Join me at responsibleeatingandliving.com. Don't forget to download our free app and have a delicious week.